Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 328, recorded on April 14th, 2017. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
Good. Hey, I'm out of the closet.
You have a new place?
Forgot to mention that.
Podcast room?
Yeah.
Are you in like a shower stall now?
No, I'm actually in an extra bedroom. Well, not extra bedroom. My kids decided they were going to share, so hey. Here I am. I've got an actual legitimate office.
They're going to regret that decision.
It's so far so good. I'm not going to persuade them to mess it up.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome, and I don't need to worry about coming out of the closet because I already have a nice size office.
Nice. All right. So iPhone iOS news.
We're supposed to talk about my issues. It's all about me.
God, Adam.
It is. It's all about Adam.
You know, people have already thought that, actually. I do get emails saying that you walk all over me occasionally. Which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, I get actual emails like that.
I have gotten a couple. It's hilarious. Anyway, go ahead. You have a story. You've had some issues.
It's legit.
You've had some issues with your Apple Watch. So let's hear it.
Yeah, okay. So I guess this is somewhat of a plea for help if anybody else has this issue and knows a fix, because apparently Apple doesn't want to help me whatsoever. And it's such a minor, stupid thing. And I thought it was going to be like the simple make the Genius Bar appointment. They'll look at it. They'll see this thing doesn't work. And they'll just like give me a new watch, right? One that works. So it has to do with the heart rate sensor on my Apple Watch Series 2, which I just got, you know, when they did the update. And since I've received it, the heart rate sensor works. So you know how like when the heart rate sensor comes on, you get the two green little lights and it does its thing and it takes your heart rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm doing a workout, if I'm doing anything, I get the data. I see the data in the activity app, the log. You know, it's taking it every 5 minutes or whatever it's supposed to take. But for whatever reason on this watch, every time that I go to the apps, to the heart rate app, and open it up, it just sits there. It shows the little animation of the heart beating, like it's taking a reading, but it doesn't display anything on the screen in terms of a heart rate. And then, so it goes through that whole cycle, and then the first time it gets to the point where you can hit the, like, try again. So it says, nope, try again. You hit try again. Again, the animation goes. It doesn't report any heart rate data. And then it says the message, oh, make sure that it's low and tight on your wrist. And here I am, like, jamming it into my wrist as, like, hard as I can. Or tightening the strap till like my hand's turning blue.
So the genius saw that and they didn't replace it?
No. So here's the deal. So I go in, so I'm like, okay, this is really stupid and weird. And here's the funny thing about like when it errors out, when I exit out of the app and then come back in, the little message at the bottom says, oh, we just took your heart rate. Here's what it is from a minute ago. So I know the sensor's working. I'm like, the sensor's working. It's just the app, whatever. There's some sort of communication between the apps and the thing, and I don't know why. And I've tried unpairing it, repairing it, restoring from backup, not restoring from backup, and it's the same result every single time. So I make the Genius Bar appointment. I go in. I show it to the genius. He's like, oh, yeah, that's really weird. That shouldn't be like that. And then he goes, well, we don't do anything with Apple Watches in the store. We don't even have the equipment to hook up to them. We have to take it in and send it to the depot, and it's going to be 3 to 5 days.
Yeah, so that happened to me too.
So. And I'm like, okay, fine, that's fine.
They don't even have replacements. You know,
write it up, send it in, and he's like, likely what they'll just do is replace it. And he even tried it on himself and got the same result. Like, same exact thing. Showed it to him. He wrote it all up. really detailed notes. Okay. And then I probably should pull up the email because this is relevant to this conversation. So I wait like 2 days and then I get this email from Apple and it says, see if I can find it. No, I'm not going to be able to find it. I should have had this ready. Basically, it says, we got your Apple Watch. We don't know what's going on. Oh, we're returning your product to you. Your product arrived at our repair center, but our technicians weren't able to process your repair request. We're sending the product to you along with a letter that provides more information. And then if you have more questions, call. So then I wait 2 more days and the package shows up and I open it up. And the first thing that's weird is it comes and it's in like a fancy, like white embossed Apple Watch box that's like hermetically sealed in plastic.
Huh. Yeah, that box is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a really nice box. And I'm like, oh, whoa, maybe they actually did replace it. And I open it up and it's even like sealed in the little like plastic wrap, you know, like the shrink, the peel off wrapper that they have for it.
But it's your...
I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah, but then I look at the edges and they're all scratched to heck, which is my watch. I'm like, okay, that's cool. That's my watch back. And sure enough, I like open it up. I try it on. Test the heart rate sensor, completely broken, not working. So I call them up and the woman's like, explain the whole story again. It's like they don't have any notes in front of them because she's like, have you tried restoring it? Yes, I told the guy at the store that. Oh, and the first thing she asks is, did you send it directly into us through the mail or did you go through the Apple store? And I'm like, do you have any information about like what's been going on? And so tell her the whole story again. And she goes, yeah, I'm just going to handle this here. Give me 30 minutes. I'll take care of it and I'll call you back. And that was this morning. So then about an hour ago, after I had not received a call back, I called Apple again, got another guy and started the whole process all over again. Oh. Did you take it into the Apple store or did you send it in to us? Have you tried restoring the software and did you restore from backup? Did you set it up as new? You know, like 20 questions again. And so it's just like, and I've been hearing this more and more, not to get negative, but I'm getting more and more of this from people on my show where they're talking about, I went into Apple and I used to have this great customer support experience and now it's just a freaking nightmare.
Weird.
Yeah, there's that extra layer of with the Apple Watch because I have to send it in and when my Apple Watch got replaced, it was really straightforward. I walked in and the gasket behind the digital crown was sticking up out.
Right.
Okay, everyone in the store is like, "Yeah, you're going to get a new watch." But not for a few days because we have to send everything off and then they send it back.
Yep.
And so I was without a watch for a week and everyone knew that I was going to have a new one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I knew this stuff and that's fine. I get it. But at the same time, it's just like, the guy at the Genius Bar, he was there with the little laptop or whatever he has and he's taking in the ticket and he's writing down full detailed notes. And it's like nobody at the call center seemed to have any clue what the last person had just done or said or anything. So I don't know what's going on with their system, but it's just completely frustrating. So I don't know what's wrong with the heart rate sensor. I've asked a couple people because my first thought was, well, maybe it's just a watch OS. You know, we've had a couple updates. Maybe it's a watch OS problem, but I've confirmed with a lot of other people and no one else seems to be having this issue with the heart rate sensor app not reporting heart rate.
Very odd.
That's right. My story. Awesome, so, Apple.
So you've been without a watch for the better part of a week.
Yep.
And when it was sent in, they just packaged it up nicely and sent it back without doing anything. And correct. You still have a watch that doesn't work right.
Right.
And no one's reading the notes for your case. So
yeah, my best
that's guess, so lame.
My best guess is what they saw was, oh, heart rate's a problem with the heart rate sensor. And I bet you they took out their little diagnostic tool. They hooked up the watch to their diagnostic tool. and went, oh, the heart rate sensor is working. And yes, the heart rate sensor is absolutely working. And I told the guy, the genius bar, that it's like, there's the heart rate sensor is not the problem here. It's something between the communication between the heart rate sensor and the app, or just the heart rate sensor and real time data. I don't know how the software or the hardware works. It seems like an oddball thing, and I get that, but it's like you had a genius at the genius bar confirm that this was an issue. I'm not trying to like pull one over on you. I'm not trying to like, so, you know, but it feels like Apple has become a lot more, when it comes to repairs and things like that, about the bottom line now. And I don't know if this is an Angela Ahrens thing, if this is a Tim Cook thing, or what's going on, but I'm hearing more and more stories. This isn't just, you know, this is my one story, but I get stories almost daily now from people that say, and I still get the ones that say, yeah, I had a great experience, but it's fewer and far between what it used to be. I mean, I used to only get raves from people about Apple's customer support experience.
Is it just related to the watch?
Huh?
Is it just related to the bad experiences?
No, it's related to iPhone, it's related to Macs. It's, you know, it's just, it used to be this wonderful, magical experience. You would go in if you had a problem, and you know, 90% of the time, you would be walking out of the store that day with a resolution, I think. You know?
Mm. Yeah.
And it's just not that way anymore.
Yeah, if it's something like an iPhone, there's a much higher likelihood you walk out with a resolution. If it's Apple Watch, nope, not going to happen. Because every single watch, no exceptions, goes to their service center, even if everyone knows that you're just getting a new watch.
Again, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. That's fine. But, you know, if the technician at the Genius Bar has taken the product in and said, look, we know there's a problem with this, and they send it to the repair depot, don't take 2 seconds, or not take the guy's word for it and just like flip it around and send it back, which is what it feels like they did. I mean, literally, the timing on the email seems like they had it for like maybe an hour or two, and then was like, nope, we're sending it back.
That's usually how it goes. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe other people have an opinion, but it just, you know, I don't know. Something's going on, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's clearly some sort of communication disconnect, because there's no reason at all why you should have this ridiculous incident. And especially for it to have gotten to the point where it's worth detailing on the show.
Just, yeah.
Well, and even simple things like, I mean, the other thing this morning was like the girl was very helpful. She was great, wonderful on the phone. Says, I'm going to go handle this. Give me about 30 minutes. I'll call you back and let you know what's going on. And then I don't get a call back.
That's weird.
Yeah, see, that's just crappy.
That seems outside the norm.
And I have to call back, and not only that, I call back, and the next guy I get has no clue what's going on with my ticket, yet I have a repair number, a ticket number. You know, there's supposedly notes in there, I think.
Weird.
And he even said, give me 10 minutes to review your case. And then he comes back on the line and goes, did you unpair the watch and reinstall the software? Yes, I told the guy at the Genius Bar that. I told the last girl that. I'll tell you that too. I mean, you try to be nice and friendly and kind, but at the same time, in the back of my mind, it's just like, I want to just like chew somebody out, but it's not this guy's fault, right? So it's just crazy.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
That's a bummer. Cathartic. Maybe next time you, I don't know, elevate to level 2 or something like that.
Yeah, right. I'll probably, I mean,
elevate.
I need to call them again, because the last guy is like, can you unpair it and then set it up as new? And I said, okay, I'll do that one more time for you.
Oh,
and
then, you're supposed to lie when they tell you to do that. Don't you know that?
Yeah.
You're supposed to, oh, okay, I'm doing it now. And you like play solitaire for 2 minutes, and then you say, okay, I'm doing it.
Well.
Anyway, okay, let's move on.
I want no question when I escalate to level two that I didn't do all my due diligence.
All right, so moving on. There were some updates, beta updates, I should say, pushed out this week. We got the second beta of iOS 10.3.2. Sent out to developers and public testers. Really nothing new in there. Just some fixes to Siri car kit commands. Jeff.
Also fixes VPN. VPN.
There you go. So I was looking for.
Wasn't that the one that had the 64-bit let's all freak out thing in it?
Jim? Yes.
All right. So what's the story with that, Jeff?
Okay. So bless her little hearts. Forbes ran an article saying that the 10.3.2 update, the beta update, removes 32-bit support. So that meant the iPhone 5 and 5C would not be supported with this minor point update. And they would be forever stuck at 10.3.1. And that just seemed so completely wrong to me. So I went and looked at the restore images on Apple's developer site, and sure enough, the restore image for 10.3.2, 32-bit for iPhone 5 and 5C is there. So I don't know what they were thinking when they wrote that piece, but they got a substantial portion of the internet all freaked out, their panties in a bunch, because they thought that Apple was screwing over the iPhone 5 and 5C owners, when in fact that's not the case at all and never actually was.
Yeah.
So
okay, good reporting.
Or there you go. Doing their due diligence, yeah, and reporting.
Well, it's good that you did your due diligence. You actually went and looked.
It just seems so stupid that Apple would do that. So I went and looked.
Doesn't make sense. All right, cool. They've also released the second beta of tvOS 10.2.1, and that's only to developers because you need your little USB-C cable. But as far as what's new in there, it seems like bug fixes. Moving on, it seems like Apple is having...
Do you want me to tell you another problem I found, though?
Yeah, go for it.
10.3.2 and Watch OS. What is it? Watch OS 3.2. Whatever the beta for Watch OS is, when you're running the current beta of Watch OS and you're running 10.3.2 beta, the thing where you unlock your iPhone and it unlocks the watch isn't working.
Mm.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. So I mean, I know it'll be back. I'm not complaining. I'm just letting people know. If you see that it's not just you. It's what the beta is doing. But you have to be a developer to get the watch beta anyhow. So,
and it's not a smart thing to put the beta on your watch unless you really need it for something for a good reason.
Yeah, and I put it there just so that I can see what's going on, so that when people ask and say, is this really broken, I can say yes or no.
Cool. Have you guys experienced an issue with your watch where the alarm going off does not actually buzz? The Taptic Engine doesn't buzz, or maybe it buzzes just like one buzz and then it stops. And then you don't realize that it's going until you look down and you're like, holy crap, I'm, 5 minutes late or whatever.
There's a new setting. Is that what you're talking about?
No. I mean, maybe I tripped a setting. What are you talking about?
Man, I'm trying to remember where it is. I think it's in the ringers thing.
What is
there that? It's under sounds. There's a new setting, and it did get tripped or flipped for some people. I think this is how I found out about it. Under sound, is it sounds and haptics? Yeah, so you now have vibrate on ring and vibrate on silent. Is that what we're talking about?
No, vibrate when the alarm goes off. The problem is I'm the only human being who uses alarms on the Apple Watch. So this is only on
Apple Watch. This isn't on the iPhone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The thing I'm talking about is a new setting in sound and haptics. You can now, when it's in silent mode, not even have it vibrate.
Right. Yeah, you can
there's a separate setting for that.
The vibration is now untied from
the toggle switch.
The toggle switch, yeah, which is cool. So, but anyway, I'll figure that out.
Check the haptic strength in the watch app.
It's not that. It's just a glitch out. I have issues, and we don't need to talk any more about those today. So, according to Cohen and Company analyst Timothy Arcuri, he's been doing some research in China, I believe, looking at what's going on with the supply chain and checking up on things. And basically what he's found is Apple's having some issues with the Touch ID being placed under the display. And that's, so for the iPhone 8, that's what we're expecting. That's what all the rumors are pointing toward, a non-physical home button, and then Touch ID under the screen. And the yields on those displays are super low. And so he has come to the conclusion that we will see one of three things happening with the iPhone 8. The first being Apple removing Touch ID from the iPhone 8. But he does not believe that to be likely because it's not secure enough and it might create issues with Apple Pay, etc. The other option, the more likely is that Apple would delay production or it would just be a slow trickle just because it's a yield issue. If it's a yield issue, it's clear that they've committed to it. They think it can be done. They're just kind of trying to refine the production process.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this every year, right? We saw this with the
Jet Black
and other things. Wait.
Famously, if you listen to this podcast, you know all about
the white iPhone 4. Yeah, let's not talk about it. and the
oh, good times.
The other
certain people built their own.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah. The other option he says is Apple may put Touch ID on the back of the phone. However, he admits that it would be it would not be a user friendly or optimal solution. Obviously, I think Apple really likes the idea of when you press the home button to wake up your phone, you're also authenticating. However, this does line up with a rendering, a photo of some, it looks like some engineering drawings that was posted on Weibo, and it appears to be at Foxconn. So this is in, it seems like it's in the engineering verification testing stage of drawings. So at this point in the game, this is probably, you know, one of 10 different drawings that Apple is playing with for the production line. But if you've had a look at it, you're going to say, ugh, that's kind of gross. So what we're seeing is a vertically oriented double camera with a...
That kind of makes sense.
with a Touch ID spot on the back. And then we have the stainless steel chassis going around the sides, and it's kind of an odd orientation. However, these drawings are not the most flattering rendering of a final product. But it
looks like something you just see in like in the factory, something that they would have for matching up on equipment.
Yeah,
they're just technical drawings, right? It's just technical line drawing, right?
Yeah. It's not something that's ever intended to be seen by the public.
Right.
Yeah. The fingerprint sensor on the back thing. I mean, that's what Android devices do, and it was Dave Hamilton that I think pointed out that in some ways it kind of does make sense. It's weird to us because we're so used to the Touch ID sensor on the home button. And I think it would be weirder for things like Apple Pay, where you're doing like tap to pay, where having your finger on the front part of the phone or your thumb on the front part of your phone makes sense. But if you think about how you pick up your phone and hold it, I think most of us, myself included, I always use my my index finger right in the back middle of the phone to like support it when I'm picking it up and looking at it. So my finger personally lands like right where the Apple logo would be.
Yeah, so, and for me, my fingers all end up on the sides, none on the back.
Yeah. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities. You know, I think Apple has plans, like when they're doing these designs, as you were mentioning, Michael, you have plan A, which is the under the glass thing. Then you have a plan B and a C, and you probably have a D that's like, well, what if we have to put it on the back?
Yeah.
Right?
And if they do put it on the back, odds are they're going to do it in a way that that makes more sense than what we're seeing from other companies, like, yeah, you know, Samsung and Google.
Yeah. And I don't think they're going to put it on the back. I've been maintaining, and no one's talked about a design like this. It's only in my head. But to me, when I heard the whole function bar thing where, you know, the bottom like little portion of the screen was going to be like a separate OLED kind of display and have some function buttons in there, to me, that feels like a touch bar kind of thing. And I don't see why they couldn't just have a touch bar with a square Touch ID sensor like the one that's on the MacBook Pro that totally blends in with the black of the screen right there in the center. And then you have a couple of dynamic function keys on either side of that display. And it's just down there at the bottom of the phone. And it just kind of almost seamlessly blends in. It's not going to be as good as having it under the glass, but I think that sort of solution would be better than putting it on the back.
I think it would
look a lot sexier.
If that's not their primary design pick, if that's not their top design pick, I'd say it's in the running. Now, this makes me wonder, though. So we've got the home button being replaced by a screen, which begs the question, at least in the case of having it a touch bar sort of thing, you know, what is the advantage? Right?
So, you'd say aesthetics is one.
Well, okay. So you say
aesthetics, it would probably, if Apple positions that button on the back correctly, then it could be easier to handle your phone for Apple Pay.
Potentially. But I mean, just in general, it seemed like the idea of having that screen at the bottom replacing. So the idea is we want more screen real estate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we've got this function bar thing happening, this dynamic function bar, which is primarily the home button. I don't know. It raises a lot of questions, and it's really, really interesting. You know, if you're doing,
think of things, it like a touch bar. I mean, right? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, if you're doing, okay, if you think about it as a touch bar, the touch bar is not an extra 20 pixels high when you're watching a movie, right? It doesn't give you an extra little bit of movie real estate.
Correct. It wouldn't.
And so,
but
at the same time, if you're trying to add functionality, it feels like you would need to dedicate that space for that. You can't be scrolling through your mail app, for example, and have mail messages down there. And at the same time, if you decide, oh, I want to go back to the home screen, you've got a mail message there instead of a home button.
Right.
So I don't know what's going on. It's a really weird design.
Sorry, I was going to try and answer your question. I think you could have hotkeys and you could have buttons there. And you could also visually do some interesting things where, I mean, you could have a folder icon there, or you could have a mail menu, you know, an inbox icon there, or a box icon there. And when you tap on it, it then scrolls up, you know, opens up in the main display an overlay or something like that. Right. You could do some interesting things, right? And so then each app could dynamically control the buttons down there and the functions just like the touch bar does.
Yeah. Well, at the same time,
you could have a little, you know, a thumbnail scrubber slider. Who knows?
That would be cool. So number one concern is I want that home button to always be there and always work the way that it does right now. And I think that was one of the genius things that Apple did, because if you remember back in the day, what we had for smartphones were basically PDAs where to pretty much access any functionality, you had to deal with the dynamic interface. And one of the great things about the iPhone is that you had that home button that always was there and it always worked and it always did the same thing that you wanted it to do, no matter what happened, right? And I hope we're not losing that.
Right. I don't think we are. I'm looking at my phone right now and just trying to think of some interesting design things. So, you know, my what I imagine is if you pick up your phone right now and you look at where the home button is, right? You have that little black area at the bottom.
Yeah.
To the left and the right. And so imagine if that was active display area, but a separate display. It's not part of the main display. It's some sort of secondary navigation. So the home button stays there. And I'm thinking, for example, you know, the touch bar has that cool, say, like photo scrubber for photos.
Yeah.
Obviously, you wouldn't have with the home button in the middle, you wouldn't have enough space to maybe do a full scrubber where you're going all the way across and sort of swiping across. But what if the interface was you have three little thumbnails on the left-hand side of the home button, and then what you have on the right side is like a little slider bar, and you slide it to the left, and it starts scrolling through those little thumbnails on the left-hand side of the button to the left, and you pull to the right, and then it starts going right, and then you can find the photo you're looking for, tap on it, and then it opens in the Photos app, right? So you could do some creative things if the UI elements that you can put down there are dynamic. They could be informational. They could be buttons and sliders. They could be, you know, thumbnails. All sorts of things could be done. And it's a nice quick area that's accessible at the bottom of the phone with your thumb. It's a very reachable area.
Yeah.
So if you started to get creative about your interfaces and what you were doing down there, and you had the ability to make that a dynamic space that was contextual to the apps, you could do some really interesting UI things. And I think that's the kind of thing, the kind of thought experiments Apple would go through with something like that. And I think they would discover and find some really creative ways to use that space.
That would be really cool.
Yep. Yeah.
So I think that's what they're doing. I think that's what the function, the function bar, think of, to me, the way I've been thinking of it is, look at what they've done with the touch bar, but now apply that to the phone, and you have to get even more sort of creative about the way that you would implement that.
Right.
Right. You really have to start to think outside of the box, because it's going to be a much smaller space that you're working with.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what they're doing. All signs point to this happening. And hopefully it ends up being a super useful thing. So, yeah. In addition, Arcuri also mentioned that based on his research and the product pipeline, he believes all three of the next generation iPhones, the 7S and the 8, or whatever they're going to be called, he thinks they're going to have 3 gigabytes of RAM, which is kind of in contrast with most of the other rumors, which indicated that only the 8 would have 3 gigs, but he believes they're all going to have 3 gigs. And this isn't very surprising to me. I think that it's something that Apple wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good for everybody. It's good for, Safari tabs and apps and that sort of thing. So RAM is good.
RAM is good.
Yep. All right. And with that, we don't have anything more to talk about, right? We're
really? That's it.
That's it. That's all we got this week. Jeff, what do you have for a pick?
Oh, my pick. I forgot the, I can never remember the name of this stupid app.
Sounds awesome already.
But I'm afraid someone's already picked it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Amarok?
What is it?
Amarok?
Mm-mm.
Amaroq. Okay, it's a Mastodon client for the iPhone.
A what?
I totally lost. Holy crap. Okay, there's like three people out there that are going, seriously? There's a Mastodon client for the iPhone? Okay, Mastodon is this new social network thing that that's supposed to be like the great new thing because it's more distributed and it's the way I see it, it's more like a social network for nerds. For people that aren't afraid to dive under the hood with tech stuff. And so I'm checking it out, and it's a new thing, and so you can have different instances of the Mastodon servers. You can host your own Mastodon servers, and the first one that popped up was Mastodon.social. And they've had to stop people from signing up on that one because they can't handle the load. So I signed up on Mastodon.network. And instead of trying to use a web interface for everything, I went and checked online and on the App Store, and there's a client for Mastodon called Amarok. And it's working really well. It's sort of like having Tweetbot for Mastodon.
Cool.
Should I have come up with anything more esoteric for a pick today? Holy crap.
That's fine.
Well, for the three people out there that were already playing around with Mastodon, there you go. It's out there. It's on the App Store. And just like all the other social networks, I'm Jay Gamut.
Nice. Way to be consistent.
Yeah.
All right. Adam, go.
Yes, sir. I'm going to pick a little app that I needed the other day. I realize I have Adobe Creative Cloud, and I think Adobe has a similar product to this. But I was in the need to do some quick little touch-up and clean-up removal of some background stuff on my iPhone. And I came across a little app called Touch Retouch by Advasoft, ADVA Soft. And it's just a simple little app where you can bring in a photo or an image. And if you need to, like, get a wire out of the background, like, they have a special tool just for removing, like, telephone wires and lines. Or if you want to, like, clean up something in your photo, you know, it's one of these simple little, you know, tap this. It's got a little healing brush. It's got some brush on stuff. It's got different tools, clone tools that will allow you to just quickly on an iOS device, like, clean up an image.
Cool.
And it's not really any more complex than that. I was trying to get a price for you.
$2.
$1.99.
Yeah, it was not very expensive. So it kind of has one touch repair for removing objects. It's got stuff for cloning things if you want to do, you know, cloning or just eliminating objects from backgrounds. And it seemed to work pretty well. You know, it's not Photoshop. You're not going to be able to do, like, you know, massive kinds of photo editing, but if you just need to quickly clean something up and you got a couple bucks, it worked and it was good. So Touch Retouch. Yeah, and if you don't have, like, a Creative Cloud subscription or something, like, I can't remember, Adobe Fix is the other one, right, Jeff? You probably know a little bit more about that, but, and I don't think you need an Adobe subscription. I think you can do some basic stuff with that, but
yeah, that you need a free Adobe subscription,
right?
And I think that's how they've set it up for all of their apps now, which is whatever. But it's, yeah.
Okay. So, well, if for every reason you don't want to sign up for Adobe and you just want something you can buy for a couple bucks, try this one.
Cool. All right. So my pick is going to be SeatGeek, specifically the app on iOS. But have you guys heard of SeatGeek?
For airplanes?
No, that's SeatGuru.
SeatGuru.
I believe. This is SeatGeek, all one word. It is for finding tickets to events, music events, sporting events. And so actually one of my friends works on this. It's a website also. You can go to SeatGeek.com and browse through their stuff. But their iOS is really cool. Or the iOS app is really cool. So, you know, you can search through all the events. They have pretty much all the things you're looking for. So if I want to see, games at Wrigley Field, for example. I can click on that, and it tells me all the games there. I can click on the one, you know, Pirates playing 2 days from now. And the cool thing that they do is they have a deal rating thing. So it's based on the price combined with your actual spot in the venue. So you can sort it by deal, which is good. And then you can actually filter down so you can, you know, hone in on a good price and then get a good deal for that given price. Now, that's really cool. The next thing that is impressive is, so if you buy your ticket to some music thing in the app, of course, you can use Apple Pay on your phone. But it will also just immediately, well, I should say it also will let you see the prices of the tickets with the with all the fees included, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But it keeps your little scannable barcode within the app. So all you have to do when you get there is just open the app, because that's what you use to purchase it, and you just show it to them and it works just fine. You don't have to print. You don't have to go to some weird link. You don't have to do any of that stuff. It's right in there. It's all integrated. It's super nice. And then the most impressive thing that I found, I don't know that it works for music events, but it sure works for sporting events. So when you go click on one of the seats, you're like, oh, this spot looks good. You click on it, and then it will show you what the field looks like from that seat. And that's really cool. So you can be like, ooh, this is a good spot, and then go ahead and purchase it. And then you can do tracking of, you know, prices and all those kinds of things. But, I mean, these guys are, it's kind of like Kayak for events in a lot of ways, because they do aggregate from other sources too. It's not just through SeatGeek. So I would definitely say it's kind of like, it's up on the same level as Kayak for events. So these guys are great. If you haven't checked them out, use SeatGeek, all one word, SeatGeek.com. And they've got this, iOS app that just keeps getting better and better, and they're just, you know, they're just a bunch of geeks making it easy to get to events, so it's great.
Yeah, I found Jeff some Super Diamond tickets for November.
Sweet.
Colorado.
Nice.
Awesome. Where?
The Ogden Theater.
Oh, the Ogden's fun.
All right.
Everyone should go see a show at the Ogden.
The Ogden. All right. I'll make the trip out.
You guys know about awesome. Super Diamond?
No, I have no idea what that is.
It's a Neil Diamond tribute band.
Oh, boy. That sounds fun.
Super fun. They're actually playing next week in San Juan Capistrano, which isn't far from me.
Oh, you could go see them and let me know if it's worth going to see them here.
Oh, it's definitely worth going to see them. I saw them years ago in Portland.
That sounds amazing. Like the thing that you need to see in Portland. Yep. It definitely sounds like a Portland happening. All right. So with that, you can find all of our picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show on iTunes, rate the show, give us stars, send us feedback if you have any to feedback@theiosshow.com. You can check out our sponsor this month, which is HelloFresh at HelloFresh.com, and use the code TIOSS35 for $35 off your first week of deliveries. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at BackbeatMedia.com. And Adam Christensen is always at the Mattcast, Mattcast.com, and at Mattcast on Twitter. That's where you can tweet at him and bother him with your Apple Watch issues.
Or tell me what a whiny bitch I am.
Yeah, do all those things. He loves it. So
that's
thanks.
Fine too. I can take it.
You've developed thick skin over the years, I'm sure.
Dealing with customer service does that to you.
Well, and being a podcaster.
and being a podcaster.
Dealing with people who have a lot of opinions. Thanks for being here, Adam. And Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, TMO Daily Observations Podcast, and at Jake Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Awesome as always. And Adam, I hope that you get your watch debacle sorted out.
Oh, it'll be fine. It'll get taken care of.
Yeah. When I went to the Genius Bar last time, I had my MacBook Pro was kernel panicking basically every time it was plugged in and went to sleep. After, you know, some unspecified amount of time, it would just poop the bed and restart.
That's awesome.
And I kind of suspect that it was some kind of software thing I have on my computer, because I'm kind of crazy with what I do sometimes. But I thought, you know, maybe it is a logic board issue, because I tried a lot of things and I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I brought it to the Genius Bar. I was having some issues with my trackpad also, not super being clicky. And they're like, yeah, so we'll replace the trackpad and, you know, we'll probably replace the logic board. I'm like, that sounds great. I doubt it's going to fix it, but it sounds great. And then I also have this issue. I've had this issue ever since I got it. There's a little weird, like, aberration on the screen in the, I don't know, it seems related to the backlight or something. It's something that you don't really notice unless you're looking for it. But every time I showed it to a genius, they're like, oh yeah, absolutely. That's not supposed to be there. No problem. We're going to replace the screen. So they sent it to the depot. They replaced the logic board. And the trackpad, which means new keyboard, new battery, because that's all part of the top case. So that's awesome. But they didn't replace the screen. The, like, most obvious thing. It's weird. So I might take care of that over the summer. I have until November for my Apple Care to wear out. So buy Apple Care on your Macs, people.
It's
a 2014 MacBook Pro, and she's got a brand new battery because I bought Apple Care.
Nice.
Yeah.
I had a machine that I didn't have to replace since 2010 because I had Apple Care.
Nice. All right. So with that, I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, and we will see you next time on the iOS show.
An iPod, a phone, and an internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right?